And the New Zealand Security Intelligence Service has apologised to investigative journalist Nikki Haga for unlawfully acquiring months of call logs of his phone. It comes after the Defence Force asked the Security Intelligence Service to help its investigation into claims that were made in Haga's 2011 book, Other People's Wars, about New Zealand's military and intelligence activity in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it was the first time that the likelihood of civilian casualties during Operation Burnham was raised in public. The official response to the book was that it was a work of fiction. However, behind closed doors, the New Zealand Defence Force concluded that the leaked material on which the book was based was genuine, that they had a whistleblower in their ranks, and they started investigating connections between Mr. Haga and a possible internal source. Well, in a decision released this afternoon, the Acting Inspector General of Intelligence and Security says the SIS unlawfully got months of Haga's phone records, as well as those of a Defence Force officer suspected of being his source. Well, Nikki Haga's lawyer, Felix Geiringer, joins me now. Good evening.
Good evening.
Is it a big deal to get an apology like this?
Well, it's a big deal to get a positive decision out of the Inspector General's office, especially when you think about how this could have come about or couldn't have come about, because what we're talking about here is an operation that was conducted entirely in secret. Nikki was never told that this had happened. It just so the mere fact that he found out and was able to lay a complaint is incredible in and of itself.
How did he find out?
It's a little bit of a convoluted story, but the essential point is that he was in communication with the chief executive of our New Zealand Security Services, Rebecca Kitteridge, and just on a suspicion, he asked the question of whether they had been conducting operations on him in relation to determining his sources for New Zealand Defence Force. It's not that he's a naturally suspicious guy, maybe it is that he's got some of that in him, but it just came up in correspondence, something alerted him. So he asked the question, and then he got back the answer from Ms. Kitteridge that they would neither confirm nor deny whether they had conducted operations on him to determine his sources for the New Zealand Defence Force.
Gosh, immediately she said that.
Well, when she gave him the response, yeah, that was the response from her, was she would neither confirm it nor deny it.
No, I mean, was it on the phone or in written form?
Written form.
I see. So she had a short time to think about it and could neither confirm nor deny. So his suspicions were piqued.
And hence the complaint. Now, this only happened last year. So this is an operation from 2011. But it wasn't uncovered, as it were, until last year. And indeed, it wasn't until last month that Nikki and the rest of us found out what's in this report.
And they claimed, the SIS claimed that they were investigating espionage, and that was their justification for it.
Yes, I think if you read the report, look, this is my reading of the report. It's not word for word what the acting and Inspector General says, but my reading of the report is that that was quite clearly a hindsight excuse, something they made up afterwards. Because if you look into the report, there's a discussion of what the New Zealand Defence Force and the SIS thought they were doing at the time. And it appears that they didn't really talk about themselves in terms of conducting a criminal inquiry at all. They were exercising these powers, but they were doing so supposedly to investigate their own internal security procedures.
With their Defence Force officer?
The other person
yes,
they were investigating,
the other person.
Was a New Zealand Defence Force officer. So when they actually took the steps that have been found to be unlawful, it appears the only record that they kept was discussing it in terms of checking their own security procedures. And it's only after the fact, only once somebody pointed out to them that they weren't even allowed to do that unless they were doing something like investigating espionage, that suddenly they come up with this, oh yes, that's what we were doing, we were investigating espionage excuse. But from my reading of the report, there is just nothing contemporaneous to suggest that they were even conduct an espionage inquiry at the time.
Well, in this particular instance, it's to do with making sure that your journalistic sources are protected. And Nicky Hager, as well as this apology, he would like the SIS to make sure that they have policies in place so that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This is what's at the heart of it. I mean, being a journalist doesn't sort of make you immune to criminal investigation. Of course it doesn't. You know, if you're a journalist and you're breaking the law and they're looking into that, you get investigated just like anybody else. And if you're doing something that, genuinely is a threat to our national security, if you're a terrorist, if you're, plotting against the government some way, you could fall into the bracket of these investigations. You could be investigated. And the fact that you're a journalist does not give you an immunity from that. But what we're talking about here is something very different. It's about a journalist going about their lawful business, and in the course of that business, as journalists do and as journalists have to, receiving confidential information from confidential informants. And what our law says is that not only is the media allowed to do that, but the law is going to afford some special protection to allow journalists to be able to keep those confidential informants anonymous. The law needs to do that because unless journalists can assure their confidential informants that they will be able to maintain their anonymity, no one's going to want to talk to them. I mean, what these people do when they talk to journalists is they risk everything. I mean, they risk their careers. We've seen extreme examples around the globe. I remember the American soldier who broke the story on Abu Ghraib. Him and his entire family got run out of their hometown with death threats. They couldn't live there anymore. At the very least, these people risk their careers, and in some instances, they risk a lot more. So you have to be able to tell them that they're going to be kept anonymous. And you can't tell them that unless the law affords some protection, and it does. But here we have these investigative agencies, had it in the earlier case with the police, and now we've got it here with the SIS, who have general powers of investigation, and they don't seem to realise that there's any limitation on them using those powers in circumstances where what they're trying to do is undermine that journalistic protection of sources. And they do. There are special considerations they need to take into account. Do they really need to do it? Really justify it? Should it even be undertaken at all? And generally speaking, if what they're trying to do is undermine journalistic privilege, then the answer is no, they shouldn't be doing it.
Well, from their perspective, let's say from intelligence and security perspective, if they believe that something that's detrimental to the citizens of New Zealand from a Defence Force perspective is getting out there, what should they do?
Well, it depends what we're talking about here. Are we talking about a foreign agent who has information that could put our troops at jeopardy, and they're trying to leak that information to the enemy so that our soldiers can get killed? I mean, that's espionage, and if that's in play, then they should be investigating it and using the full force of their powers and hopefully getting the bad guy. But here what we're talking about is a member of the New Zealand Defence Force who is privy to the fact that the New Zealand Defence Force had been misleading the public and misleading the government about the scope of the operations they were conducting. So the New Zealand Defence Force had been telling the government and the people in New Zealand that they were doing one thing whilst they were doing the other. And the other was something that the New Zealand Defence Force employee clearly thought if New Zealanders knew about it, they wouldn't be very happy. And they thought there was a moral obligation to tell a New Zealand journalist, a New Zealand journalist with an impeccable record of I have to say, responsible journalism. And that journalist has carefully written about it. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who like to criticise because they don't politically agree with what's in these books. But the reality, if you read them, is they're very carefully put together. They do everything they can to protect the anonymity of the troops, for example, but they carefully lay out what the deception is, what the hypocrisies are. And in this case, it was, as I say, it was the Defence Force misleading the public about the scope of their operations.
And hence the apology.
Yes, and I've read the apology that Rebecca Kitteridge has sent out. I mean, my view is it's not much of an apology. What it does is it sets out what the Inspector General has found. It doesn't accept them as facts. It just says the Inspector General has found this and the Inspector General has found that. And then at the end of it, it says we apologise for these failings. It's rather ambiguous in the apology that I saw whether they were actually apologising for doing anything wrong or just apologising for getting caught for it. And it was that badly worded. But certainly nothing about the scope of what they did. Nothing really genuine about the fact that they accept they shouldn't have done it. And nothing about the future, nothing about making sure they're not going to do it again.
When did that arrive, that apology?
A few days ago.
Right, so, and what he would like now is an admission of what they did and the policies in place to stop it happening again, as we said earlier.
Yes, I mean, so we actually mostly in the dark about exactly what took place. The Inspector General has highlighted one or two things. There's the unlawful obtaining of telephone records, for example. But, you know, we don't even know the full scope of the operation. And we don't have any of the documents involved. We don't know who was involved. We don't have anything to do with the decision-making. Supposedly, they went through a decision-making process, but they've not even to the Inspector General have they managed to come up with any documents to demonstrate it.
Are you legally able to be privy to those?
Well, they can only be withheld under our privacy and official information legislation if, in fact, they would be doing something like prejudicing the security of New Zealand to divulge them. And it's very difficult to see how that would be, an unlawful investigation against a journalist. It seems to me the only thing that the only reason they don't want to divulge those documents is because they're extremely embarrassing to them. But I can't see how they could possibly be something that would jeopardise the security of New Zealand. When the Inspector General has found that they weren't even doing anything in relation to the security of New Zealand, that's the whole point. If they had been genuinely doing something to protect the security of New Zealand, then they would have had lawful power to do it. It's because they didn't that they didn't, as it were. So I struggle to see how they're going to resist those demands lawfully. So Nicky wants to get hold of those documents, and then he wants a fulsome apology, one that actually sets out an acceptance of their unlawful behaviour and apologises for it in full. And then, he, like you say, the question is, how do we stop this happening again? And the way we went through with the police in the last few years is that they had policies on how to do investigations when issues of journalism came up. But they were not good policies, and they were not well followed. And what happened out of Nicky's case is they rewrote all of those policies. So now we have much clearer policies, much more clearly defined. It's much easier for the police to understand when they have to follow them and what they have to do. And, you know, it's not a panacea, it's not a cure-all, but at least now a policeman who's going to conduct a new investigation with the same sort of issues has a clear document that tells them exactly what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing. And what Nicky would like to see is the same thing happen with the SIS. There's one final point I would like to make, which is the New Zealand Defence Force. I saw that there was a statement from the New Zealand Defence Force. Some journalist asked them for their comment, and they said, well, there's been no criticism of us by the Inspector General, and therefore we've got nothing to comment on. But that's not right. The Inspector General of Intelligence and Security doesn't have any control over the New Zealand Defence Force. It's outside of her purview. So they can't be investigating the New Zealand Defence Force and weren't purporting to. But if you actually read the report, there's a lot in there that reflects very badly on the New Zealand Defence Force. It was the New Zealand Defence Force that made the decision to go after the source. And so in terms of culpability, in terms of which agencies are really culpable here, New Zealand Defence Force is right up there and does have some serious explaining to do. And if its attitude to this decision is just, well, because the Inspector General does not have power over us, we're just not going to comment, well, that's not going to be a satisfactory outcome. And Nicky may well not be prepared to leave that there either.
Very interesting case, and we'll watch it with interest. So thanks for joining us tonight, Felix.
You're welcome. Nice to talk to you.
That's lawyer Felix Geiringer, acting for journalist and author Nikki Hager.